these are players who could have been in the majors at the time, some of them, I'm sure, and he just never had a shot at it. And so they had one chance of playing baseball, and it was putting on a clown outfit and painting their faces. They were just trying to make it at a time of such endemic racism.
Welcome to Forum, Beyond the Pages, the podcast that tells the stories behind the stories of Florida Humanities award-winning magazine. I'm Andrew Quintana. It's game on in this newest season as we speak to the writers who penned the articles in our spring 2024 sports issue of Forum. This week, writer Eric Barton discusses his article, Send in the Clowns. Right now, it's spring training for Major League Baseball. That means all 30 professional teams are gearing up for another season. And there's no better place to catch the action than right here in Florida. When you think of baseball in the Sunshine State, you probably think of the exhibition games that happen all across the state this time of year. You may also think of the Rays or the Marlins, the two MLB teams that have played in Florida for three decades. But there's one Florida team that seems to have been lost to history, probably the most successful pro sports team to begin in the state, the Miami Ethiopian Clowns. In his story, Barton dives into the not-so-funny history of the Clowns. Eric Barton is a freelance journalist who has written for publications like Outside, Food & Wine, and Flamingo. He grew up rooting for the Red Sox in a Yankee household. He now lives in Miami, not far from where the Miami Ethiopian Clowns once called home. I guess before we bring in the Clowns, I wanted to know how this story came together. Just from reading the article, it sounded like a lot of the information wasn't readily available. You mentioned all the bits and pieces you had to get from different sources.
Yeah, I guess, it first came together. I was just kind of looking for a story for the sports issue, and I've always been a baseball fan. And I had lived in Kansas City for a few years, and there's the Negro Leagues Hall of Fame there. And it's just something I had been fascinated with since. So I kind of looked into what was the history of the Negro Leagues in Florida and came across this team called the Ethiopian Clowns. And I had never heard of them before. It was such a fascinating name. So I kind of dug deep into it. There were a few academic articles online about them, but very few, news articles or references or photos. There was one video that I could find on YouTube, and that's it.
That video is actually interesting to me. I love the opening of the story, which starts on that footage that you said is kind of the only surviving piece of media about the Clowns.
Yeah, I mean, someone uploaded it to YouTube. I have no idea who, but it's basically this clip of the Clowns performing sort of this act that they would do before games, where it's very Harlem Globetrotters-esque, sort of bouncing balls off of their shoulders, and they're actually continuing it during the game where, they're hiding the ball in their pants and pretending to throw it back to the pitcher to try to catch the guy off on first. It's very comical. It's just this one snippet from this one game, and it's really the only video I think that exists in the world.
So when you were doing research for this story and speaking to the Negro Leagues Hall of Fame, how much information did they have on this team? You could only find a clip that was uploaded to YouTube by someone random, and that was the only media you had. How much of this information was available even in their area of expertise?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's not a lot. There is certainly statistical information on the teams, who played on what year and wins and losses. But this team sort of existed in this little black hole of coverage. The African-American or black newspapers of that era really didn't want to cover this team because a lot of people found it offensive. And the white-owned newspapers really didn't cover the team either because it was a Negro Leagues team. So they didn't think it was significant. So I did find, I sort of went into the archives at the Miami Public Library, and I found clips from the Miami newspapers that would be a paragraph long of just saying the team was in town and they're going to play somebody. It really kind of came and went with almost no attention in the media.
I'm a huge baseball fan. And as far as I know, Florida didn't really have a professional team until the Marlins were established in 1993. But in your story, you mention teams like the Miami Giants, which were the early inception of the Ethiopian Clowns. You mentioned them selling out stadiums in the 30s. So despite not having a Major League Baseball team, it seemed like there was a presence of baseball in Florida happening with teams.
Yeah, in the 1930s, there were a good number of semi-pro teams throughout the state. And you know, a lot of times they were railroad workers who were building Flagler's Railroad. And on the side, they would play, like there was a team in Fort Lauderdale called the Tarpons, for instance. And sort of at the same time, sort of a parallel league were these Negro League teams. The ones in Florida at the time in the 1930s were not part of the national, what became the Negro Leagues. So they were known as barnstormers, and the Miami Giants were one of them. They would travel the country and just show up in a town and play whatever the local team was. And that's where the clowns came out of.
I am curious about that early inception of the team. In your story, it takes place in the 1920s. At that point, the Negro Leagues really haven't been established yet, but it is kind of the early version of it. Can you tell me a little bit more about that version of the Negro Leagues that started and kind of how the Ethiopian clowns were bred out of it?
I went over in reporting this story to a place called Dorsey Park, which is a little baseball diamond in what's now called Overtown. It's the traditionally black neighborhood in Miami. The Miami Giants and then the clowns after that would play at this baseball diamond, and they would drive around in cars, with bullhorns and get people out. And then people would walk to the stadium, and it became this thing where, you know, vendors were all surrounding it. It was very much like it was a community event. And there was this real sense of community around the Negro League teams. And a lot of cities in Florida had one of these at the time, like elsewhere in the country. And, you know, for these very impoverished black neighborhoods, this would have been a real source of pride. It gets a little more complicated, though, when they become the clowns and start wearing face paint.
Yeah, you touch upon it on your story, but it is interesting that it almost seems like the ugly side of what these players had to do in order to draw a crowd kind of was bred out of a necessity for these players to have an outlet to play the game.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, these are players who could have been in the majors at the time, some of them, I'm sure, and you just never had a shot at it. And so they had one chance of playing baseball, and it was putting on a clown outfit and painting their faces. Not all of them liked it. Not all of them were happy about it. There were certainly some players that rebelled against it. And there were, at the time, black newspapers that really criticized it. There was a famous writer for the Pittsburgh Courier named Wendell Smith, and he called the clowns a fourth-rate Uncle Tom minstrel show. But it's hard to criticize the players. You know, they were just trying to make it at a time of such endemic racism.
How successful were the clowns?
Yeah, it's sort of anecdotal, but it does seem like there were some articles that referred to them as being very successful. There was articles that referred to them as being undefeated. I came across this one article from the Indianapolis Record from June of 1941, and the clowns were in town to play the local team. The newspaper described them as the most popular attraction in baseball. So they did come to town and bring these huge crowds. And for many years, it was this big attraction that made at least the owner a lot of money.
I did want to kind of touch upon that, because despite this being an outlet for players to be able to play baseball, there is that kind of hanging cloud of the fact that this isn't a kind of grassroots movement among black players. This was a white promoter who found talent and bought it and tried to sell it to people around the country.
So the team was owned by Sid Pollack, who was a baseball promoter from New York State. And he, at the time, he owned several Negro League teams around the country, including one that may even have a more complicated history called the Zulu Cannibals. And he got a lot of criticism at the time, as he should have, for the way that he took advantage of these players and forced them to do these things that must have been uncomfortable. It's interesting, when he passed away, throughout the years, he had these articles written about him as sort of being this this hero of baseball, of being somebody who did so much to promote the Negro Leagues. But looking back on it now, in the lens of this time, it seems so harsh the way he treated his players.
Who were the players on this team? It's almost a revolving door of talented black baseball players of the time. And even down the line, you have former greats like Satchel Paige joined the team for a period. Who were the players behind the team?
Yeah, so there were, so as the as the clowns traveled and, you know, throughout the years, they got more and more criticism for the actual clown outfits and the painting of the faces. And so Sid ended up dropping that. And by the 1950s, he had moved the team to Indianapolis and dropped the Ethiopian part of the name. It just became the Indianapolis Clowns. And at that point, they joined the actual Negro Leagues. They started signing up some pretty top-notch players, including Satchel Paige. And many major leaguers would end up playing for the Clowns before getting into the majors. So they really did get some good talent.
I was curious about that evolution. I found it interesting that the story almost takes a turn near the end where we're talking about the Ethiopian Clowns and how they were created. But then all of a sudden, they become a professional baseball team. They kind of drift away from that Harlem Globetrotter-esque performance into a professional baseball team. How did that evolution start? What was the push to end up becoming a more competitive baseball team and not just a sideshow, it seems like?
In short, we don't really know the answer. We do know that the team was getting a lot of criticism, and the black press at the time especially was criticizing it and questioning why these players had to do these things. And Sid finally did drop the routines that they would do. Whether he did that because of the criticism or because the numbers were dropping off, we don't know. But we do know that he did drop it and turn it into a more serious baseball team.
I think your conversation with the baseball historian and Ethiopian clown fan, Abel Sanchez, and your conversation with the Negro League Hall of Fame director kind of gives a pretty good dichotomy of the tension that lies behind remembering this team. What is your summation of how to properly remember a team that was controversial even for its time?
Yeah, that's such a great question. That's kind of really why I set out on this, because it, you know, watching that video of the clowns, it makes me a little uncomfortable as a middle-aged white guy. There, you know, were people who looked like me who created that world that forced these players to do that routine. And so, you know, I think oftentimes in this country, we don't talk about race because it's uncomfortable. And one of the things I think is important about this story is it does make me feel uncomfortable. And, you know, it can be hard to remember these things, but I think it's really important. I think it's good that we're talking about it. I think this is the way that we remember what people went through to get to where we are today.
That was Eric Barton on his story, Sending the Clowns. Forum Beyond the Pages is produced by Florida Humanities. Our music was created by Tampa Bay area musician JJ Padishall. You can follow him on Instagram at JJ Padishall Music. Want to get the latest issue of Forum delivered to your door 3 times a year? Become a Florida Humanities member by visiting floridahumanities.org/membership. Until next time.